Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, and, of course, our NHL Insider senior hockey writer, and brought to you by Metro Ford. And I know Metro Ford likes all sports radio stations. And Chris joins us today from Florida. This is a big, long-winded introduction to get right to the thing that I am most important to me and the most interested in, Chris. What everybody's waiting to know is, have you had good seafood in Florida so far?
I have. I managed to have a little seafood last night. So it feels like a whole different world from where I came from, Toronto, over 30 degrees here today. Almost too hot, but not complaining. And getting some of the local fare is not a bad assignment as far as assignments goes.
No, but your assignment is an important one, and it's kind of been a busy one. I don't know if you want to start with goaltender interference or finish with goaltender interference. What I loved today was the breakout rooms. I just love the ideas getting thrown out there. So I guess I'll prejudge this and say let's start with the breakout rooms. What was day two like for the GMs?
Well, the breakout groups is where some of the interesting stuff gets thrown around. Probably a lot of discussion that never leads to anything that you know turns to rule changes. Now, one of the things I found interesting that one of them discussed today. I believe it was Brad Treliving that mentioned it, that one of the GMs had thrown out the idea of what happens if you don't require coaches to be fixed to the lineup they start a game with, meaning if you have a defenseman that goes down during a game and you happen to be carrying more than six on your roster, and that you can maybe bring one in. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that gets brought up at these meetings, obviously. Some power play stuff, some face-off changes. I didn't get the feeling that anything there had real legs in terms of, you know, going to the main group tomorrow for a rule change. But I do think, especially with you know, the way their Monday was spent, with so much focus on goalie interference and you know, a potential change coming there, that it is an opportunity to maybe explore some realms beyond the box.
A couple things I want to ask you about. What happened to the changes that were coming to goalie equipment? I know that has nothing to do with this, but you know, all of this has got me. Were we a year ago talking about some pretty dramatic changes? Because all that didn't get introduced, did it?
It didn't. And, you know, I think where it's fallen by the wayside is the manufacturers. I mean, one issue that the NHL has is that it doesn't manufacture its own goalie equipment. So, you know, it's one thing for the GMs to mandate that certain rules be changed, you know, like the you know, what the padding looks like or how it conforms to the body. But if there aren't the manufacturers out there doing it to that spec and doing it in a way that's deemed safe, I think that's the key one here, because certainly the goaltending equipment manufacturers did change to try to get it to what the standard NHL wanted. But, you know, they never quite got across the line to the point that they, at last I heard, it abandoned it. I think that you know, we will see them again tackle the equipment on the top half of the body, but it's always a nightmare. I believe it's been a discussion since long before I've been around this beat, trying to put the brakes on that. And you know, the goalies will often cite safety and try to, I think, hide behind that argument, at least some of them, to have more protection and more ability to stop the puck.
Okay, I went sideways. I'll come back to what we're actually dealing with. I know that you touched on a couple of the ideas. The one-minute power play came up again, did it not? Chris, did I lose you? Uh-oh. I can hear the wind, but I can't hear Chris.
Here you go.
Okay. You know, maybe he went back to find his notes, because we talked about the one-minute, but the one-minute power play's been kicking around for a long time now, especially with overtime. But as Pat was talking about, and I've heard this before, but maybe for some of the, you know, calls, I wouldn't call them marginal calls, but, you know, things like putting the puck over the glass, et cetera, maybe, you know, a face-off violation, that could be a one-minute penalty. I know that came up today. And we will get to the goaltending, and we got him back. Chris, sorry, I hope I didn't turn you off with the question, but did the one-minute power play get brought up again?
Yes, it was. There was some talk about it. You know, again, I don't get the feeling there's the level of support you need, which would be, you know, 21 GMs to sign off on it. But it was kicked around in those breakout groups. And, you know, I should give maybe a bit of context here for listeners that aren't necessarily familiar with this. But you know, they go into four groups when they talk about these breakout groups. And it's obviously a smaller room that way. And you know, what they found over the years is it's a better place to have a discussion and to have maybe even some debate rather than, you know, 35 to 40 people in one room sitting around a huge table. If you imagine a small group meeting versus, you know, a larger one at work with staff, you know, and it basically, if anything out of those groups, you know, really garners some interest in the room, they then bring it to a larger group to see if perhaps it has, you know, some legs. So, you know, the 1 minute power play, the idea was essentially that, you know, 2 out of 5 minutes in overtime is too penal. So basically any power play in overtime for a minor penalty would be 1 minute. And, you know, perhaps for some of the non-aggression penalties, those being a puck over the glass or a face-off violation, those type of penalties that doesn't really involve hurting another player, that those could potentially be scaled back to 1 minute, even in regulation. Those were sort of mulled about and you know, mm-hmm. probably we'll hear about them down the road, but today they didn't take off in terms of having a huge amount of support to try to actually see it come to life.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, courtesy of Metro Ford, our guest here on Flames at 5. Let's get to the big one, which is goaltender interference. What do you think comes out of this meeting? What are we on the brink of for the National Hockey League moving towards the playoffs?
Well, really, they're trying to centralize the sphere of influence on this. And you know, we have 34 full-time referees in the league and you know, even a few more guys that do it on a part-time basis. And those are the ones that have essentially been responsible for you know, making their goaltender interference rulings, you know, with the help of the video room, by moving it solely to the video room and having a centralized decision maker, which is, you know, what it looks like the NHL is trying to do and have the GMs would like to see happen. You bring it down to a number closer to 4 or 5, and in the playoffs, it's 1 or 2 in terms of the exact same people every night working every game and making those kind of calls. So, you know, the wheels are in motion now to bring this in immediately. Requires the NHL Players Association to sign off on it, which I don't think will be an issue. I don't think there's any pushback from the players. I believe that the players as a whole see that there hasn't been enough consistency on these calls, and they'll give their blessing. The NHL Board of Governors, I believe, will give its blessing. And then, you know, there might be some issues still being ironed out with the Officials Association because essentially you're reducing the amount of power that these guys have. You're taking away something that they've been in charge of and saying you're no longer in charge of it. But, you know, I do believe by the time we're leaving here tomorrow afternoon that you know, there'll be a plan in place and a timeline to get this introduced before the end of the year. And you know, the hope is obviously that we'll still have some controversy or some ones that maybe there's disagreement on. But there'll be less of the coaches coming out, as Phil Housley did last night in Buffalo, or we've heard Mike mm-hmm. Babcock and others, and say, I don't know what the rule is. That this is one way, by having, you know, the same one or two or three people making the decision, it's one way that at least GMs will have a level of accountability, someone they can call, and they have a little more faith that the same standard is being applied across various situations.
It doesn't sound like it, but I'll ask the question anyway. Is there any way that this might, you know, we're always, to me, and I just talked about this, is unintended consequences. Chris, if you're having a group of people off the ice in a different location determine it, is it going to change the way the officials call the game on the ice? Are they going to somehow go, well, we'll just throw our arms up and let Toronto deal with it?
They might, you know, and I think it also, you know, sometimes the video it's alone isn't enough. I think it's still a challenge for you know, the guys in the video room to make these calls, because the one advantage referees have is, and look, I know it's easy to hate on referees, you know, rarely yep. they get praised for good work, and it's right. you know, the missed calls or the situations that are bad that gets focused on, but, you know, these guys are watching the game at a very low level. That leads, yes, to some missed calls, but I think that they're among the best handful of people in the world that do what they do, and they can see a lot more, and their feel for a game, especially the best, you know, guys who do that, and it is the best of the best that work the playoffs, you know, it sort of taking them out of it a little bit, I think, is going to be odd. I mean, obviously, there can still be a conversation between them and the video room, and I'm sure that will be a part of it, is them explaining, you know, how they saw it and having the video room confirm it in the replay process. But this certainly is, to me, an attempt to solve an unsolvable problem. And, you know, hopefully, at least through doing this, that there's a little less I think, commotion around it all because it is unsolvable and not everything will be agreed upon. But I don't get the feeling that anyone here believes it's a perfect solution, but they do feel it's a better choice than what we have now, which is mass confusion with only a couple weeks to go before the biggest games of the year.
This is clearly a poorly constructed interview because I should have asked this before, but since we're talking about reviews, were you surprised at all by the lack of interest from general managers in looking at the offside rule?
I was. You know, I really was. Apparently about 10 GMs were in support of that, and they needed 11 more to get the two-thirds majority, so 21 out of 31 would be needed to actually see a rule change come about. And, you know, just from conversations I'd had, you know, I felt like there was enough support. Obviously, there was some support, but it wasn't at that level. And what's interesting yep. here is that hockey operations themselves also supported it. You know, Colin Campbell would like to have seen this change because they just find it's a tough ruling to make. You know, the skate off the ice by 2 inches or 3 inches, it can be a difficult call, even as good as the blue line cameras have proven to be. And I think that they were hoping for a bit of a loosening of the standard there so that they're not, you know, going through the Zapruder film to get it perfect. So, you know, I was surprised that it didn't gain a little bit more, but the other way to look at it is this. It was discussed last year and didn't get to a vote. It was discussed this year and there was a vote, and you know, you only had one-third instead of two-thirds. You know, maybe by next March we'll be talking about a change.
Want to move on? No, before we move on, anything else we need to know about the GM's meetings? Anything important that we haven't touched on that you've bared witness to or heard while you've been there?
Not really, no. You know, this is one of those years where one topic is really dominating a lot of the discussion and I think a lot of the focus
right.
of the guys here. And you know, I should probably mention for context, I mean, it's pretty rare to see changes made in season. So, you know, what they're pushing towards here and switching the way this rule is administered is a little unusual. And I think it speaks to the level of frustration out there or the level of concern about, you know, what's going on. So, you know, that's really dominated most of the discussion here. And you know, we'll see what they come up with tomorrow. We'll talk to Gary Bettman tomorrow, too. So, you know, that always provides other opportunities for other storylines to emerge.
I tread very lightly on this because it's an extremely difficult day in Ottawa. Our thoughts and our prayers and, you know, condolences to Eric Carlson and his wife on the loss of their young son. This is on the heels of Jordan Staal and loss of their family's child here a little while ago. I mean, it doesn't make it any worse or any, you know, any more important because it's an NHL player, but it is part of the community that you cover and that we're around. I do want to ask you a little bit, though, about the Ottawa situation. Billboards now being, you know, paid for by fans, wanting the owner out. It seems like it might have created a bit of a you know, at least something with the Sens, who today announced that they'll hold a conference call for season ticket holders with their GM. What are you hearing down there? What do you make of the situation involving the fans, Eugene Melnyk, and just the overall feel of that franchise right now?
Well, it's highly unusual, you know, and it's been discussed kind of more privately among those of us down here because it is an issue people take note of. I mean, obviously, at no certain point is every GM or every owner, every coach in good standing with a fan base. But I think what we're seeing in Ottawa is a little bit deeper than that. And it's not just one or two or four rogue voices out there. I mean, I think that this is representative of a level of support and concern with the ownership and of this team that it is notable that the Senators are going to have a conference call with season ticket holders. I mean, we've seen a decline in their attendance, a pretty sizable one from last year to this year, you know, even deeper than, you know, a few empty seats in the playoffs has become tarped off sections and many, many, many more empty seats this year during the regular season. And, you know, I think that they have a potential issue on their hands. Not just with the billboards. I think it's what the billboards mm-hmm. represent and you know, the people behind them. And really what I've seen on social media is a pretty notable groundswell of longtime season ticket holders that have come forward and said that they're going to give up their tickets. I mean, I think that that's the degree of trouble this could lead to. And obviously a few billboards and some negative headlines in the media aren't going to force Eugene Melnyk to sell his team. But, you know, there could be a scenario where so few people go to the games that something bad happens here. So, you know, the Senators don't hide from the fact, I think, that they have some business issues. Their hockey team has some issues with the way it's built and you know, needs some changing. And, you know, off the ice, they're in they're treading towards a perilous position. You know, by no means am I saying they're leaving town or anything like that, but, you know, there's an issue here, and it'll be interesting to see how they react to it and you know, try to make some strides to extend an olive branch to the community, because any sports team anywhere in any sport is only as good as the paying customers are willing to care about it and you know, put out their money for it and support it, and that's being tested a little bit right now in Ottawa.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably connecting two stories that aren't connectable, and I might be looking at this the wrong way, but I am fascinated that this tactic has been used twice in two different locations this year. You know, Garth Snow must go on the island, the frustration with the management. This is a frustration with the ownership. I kind of, you know, and I'm not sure you and I have ever talked about this. One of the, well, no, actually we have. The Rangers with their letter, Melnick with his letter. I mean, these public communications, these public back and forths, is this the new way of doing business? Like, I mean, do you have to put a letter to the, do you have to put a full page ad in the newspaper to apologize for not making the playoffs? If you're really mad because of, you know, an owner's not making a or GM's not making a deal, is it now a GoFundMe page? Is this, are we going to see more of this?
I think we probably will. I mean, look, the fans have more avenues to have their voices heard, I think, than in the past. Certainly through
Absolutely.
Social media and different ways to maybe rally with each other and form, you know, campaigns or what have you to make that voice heard. I think that you know, this extends beyond the teams, even into the media aspect. I mean, everyone's aware that there's more and more things that people can do that don't involve sports. And there's probably a fear out there that, you know, even though, you know, pro hockey's been going for a long time and there's a lot of success in a lot of cities, it's not a guarantee that it lasts forever, that the support and the willingness by the people to pay for it is there, you know, forevermore. So, you know, I could see this being a sign of a trend. You know, I can't remember who said this, but it makes sense. I mean, if you're a team, really you have two objectives. You want your fans to believe you have a chance to win, or that you're on the path to have a chance to win. And yep. There's almost no other place in between, where otherwise you're going to lose that. And you know, obviously in a city like Ottawa right now, I think, you know, even after that run they had last year, that there is reason to have a doubt whether they're on the path to win. And obviously with the season they're having, no one is going to say they have a chance to win now. So, you know, you have to win back the public faith. I think, it's important to state your goals and to share as much with your fan base as you can without hurting your, you know, the competitive nature of what you do in terms of what your plans are. And you know, Ottawa has some bridge building to do here. I don't know that it's mm-hmm. one person's fault, but, you know, when you're the owner, it does go right to the top in terms of where the seeds of doubt are planted with this organization. They don't have a president, or they do, but he's the owner as well. And they have a very small front office, and this year has been an unmitigated disaster. So, you know, when you couple that with some of the business challenges that they were already dealing with, I think that it is smart business to talk directly to your fans. And as I say, be as open and honest as you can be, because, you know, that goes a long way, because we've seen places where it's worked, and it appears that the Rangers have done a pretty nice job at the very, very early stages, but in saying what they're going to do and delivering on it at the deadline.
Yeah, good stuff. Listen, the location's real nice, but I know there's a lot of work to be done there. It's a busy time. Appreciate you carving some time out for us. We will catch up with you on Thursday. Obviously, we'll have the GM's meetings in the rearview mirror. But as always, Chris, appreciate the visit.
Okay, Rob. Thank you, pal.